in the text of the Quran or Ahadith showing that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala on the first day had created the prototype of the woman and the man separately? I mean, do we have any reference in that?
To create separately?
Yeah, yeah, the prototype of a woman and a man separately.
You know, when it comes to the ayat of the Quran, you know that is Adam the first human?
Okay.
Who was created by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala?
Yeah.
If that is the case, then the question is that why the angels told Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that you are creating those creatures who will cause corruption in the universe.
All right.
Yeah?
Okay.
It means that they had a kind of background.
All right.
From man, from Adam, in this world. They knew that this, because this Adam was firstly created, how do they know that, for example, they will cause corruption?
All right.
Because of what? Because the similar kind of creatures before Adam, they caused corruption in the universe.
Okay.
Because of that memory they had, they say that, okay, you are creating the same thing, you know? Then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said that, no, you do not know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this Adam that now I'm creating, it is totally different.
Okay?
So, according to this, and also the question is that marriage between the children of Adam were haram.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
So now some of the scholars or some of the interpreters are of the view that the children of Adam married some children of other Banu Adam before Adam. And they were some like creatures like Adam.
Okay.
They were like human beings before Adam alayhi salatu wasalam. And they actually married them.
All right.
Or, for example, some of them know the jinns were there, or I don't know. Okay. There are different views.
Yes, yes.
But it seems like this, that before Adam, there were some other creatures like Adam alayhi salatu wasalam, or like human beings. But this Adam is the last version, or we can say the most perfect version, or the complete version of these creatures.
That's right.
Yeah, this is what some of the interpreters said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir. Inshallah, inshallah,
inshallah, you'll find your way. At the same time, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala created men and women with their own specific capabilities and potentials. And we must take into account, as biologically they are different, in terms of the capacities and their talents and the potentials, they are also different. So as you said, no one might have superiority over the other.
But now
why the people might think that in the religion of Islam, men are superior to women? How do you answer that?
Because
that so many people, when they criticize Islam, out of the context of the Islam, I don't know whether the reason is because of lack of understanding or something, they say that religion of Islam is a man-based religion, or it's a, we can say, patriarch religion.
You know, Islam is a religion that gives certain responsibilities to men and certain responsibilities to women.
Women, that's right.
Based on their natural features, characteristics, capabilities, as you say it, or abilities.
All right.
So in those kind of fields that men are more strong, more capable of performing those actions, it is given to men. In those kind of cases that women are more strong, because they, as I said, they are complementary to each other, okay?
Yes.
In those cases, the responsibilities are given to the women, to the ladies.
All right.
So that's why, since, as you rightly mentioned, biologically they are different. Psychologically, they are different.
Yes.
Physically, they are different. So since they have different capacities, they have different mentalities or, let's say, capabilities, then, of course, different responsibilities, different duties should be given to them.
All right.
This is something rational and logical, and there is no any doubt about
it.
Then when it comes to this point that, okay, for example, if man performs his role in that certain, for example, situation or condition. If women performs their, let's say, duties or fulfill their duties in that certain, for example, circumstance, then does it mean that one is superior over the other?
Yeah.
Of course not, because without that role that is played by women, man could not live. And without this role that is played by men, women cannot live.
All right.
So they are always in need of each other.
Okay.
They are always supporting each other. They are always complementing each other. Okay? They are,
yes,
complementary to each other. That's why it should not be given any kind of feeling of this, that, okay, I'm superior than you. Look, for example, when it comes to the issue of bringing up a child,
mm-hmm,
look at the role of mother here,
yes,
particularly in the childhood,
yeah,
is really significant.
Inside the house. That's
inside,
right,
the house, it's,
yeah,
really significant. The way that mother treat their children, the way that mother can tolerate, can bear, can, I don't know, bring up the children, it is very much important. It's very much significant. Without mother, no man can do that.
Okay.
It's very much clear.
Yes.
Okay? As without father, mother cannot play this role.
Mm-hmm.
They both should be together
to bring up the best child,
you know?
Okay.
So that's why here man cannot say that, okay, I am superior than you.
All right.
Because I am playing my role and you cannot play my role.
Okay.
No, because she is playing her own role.
Yes.
And you are playing your own role.
We must know that the men and women inside the house are doing a kind of lotf or mercy or blessing to each other. This is not,
exactly,
a duty, okay?
Exactly.
I mean, for example, bringing up a child is not a duty. This has been a talent and the potential,
yes,
that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gave to a woman.
Yeah.
And of course, the men can also bring up the children. But even according to the modern psychology and the family studies, they say that a child who is born in a single parent family, okay, will lack, for example, emotional capacities if he is with the men rather than the women, and vice versa, okay?
Yeah.
So that's the case. I mean, as you said, the roles are complementary,
yes,
to each other. That's,
yeah,
right.
Of course.
And for sure, we criticize this idea that men at the first day was deceived by the women. I mean, in terms of satanic temptations or something like that, isn't it?
What do you mean?
I mean, satanic temptations worked more on the, for example, women, and then this was the women for the first time that deceived the men because of, for example, I don't know, the power that they had.
The story of Adam and Eve.
Yeah, Adam and Eve.
In the story of Adam and Eve, you know, the point is that Azazel.
Yes.
Azazel was the name of
Iblis
before,
yes,
becoming Iblis.
Yes.
Azazel was a great personality,
mm-hmm,
you know, was the worshipper of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, was a good servant of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Thousands of years he worshipped Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
6,000 maybe years.
Exactly.
That's right.
Exactly. So he was not created as Satan. He was created as Azazel.
Mm-hmm.
Azazel was a very great servant of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Okay.
Because of being such a great servant, he was very much proud of himself.
All right.
Saying that, oh Allah, I worshipped you for these thousands, millennia, as we can say.
Yes, yes.
And then, of course, now why are you ordering me to prostrate before this Adam who is created from clay?
Okay.
I am superior than him because I am created from the light. And light is better than this clay, you know? So that's why he became a regime. So Adam knew this.
Yes.
That he was such a position, such a status before Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Mm-hmm.
Then when this Azazel came to them and swore by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, say that, I swear by Allah, if you eat from this piece of tree or fruit, you will never be, for example, misguided. You,
okay,
will never receive any punishment. So it was the first time that Adam and Eve hear swearing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was, okay, the first time.
Yes.
They did not check. They did not test Satan,
yes,
before that, you know?
Yes.
Of course, they were misguided. But this misguidance is not something like a sin. We cannot consider,
okay,
it as a sin, you know?
That's right.
Because Adam and Eve were not punished.
Yes.
They did not receive chastisement. Because coming of Adam to this earth,
yes,
was something that was decided before. Because Adam was created,
okay,
for this earth, and
that's
earth,
right,
was created for Adam. It was not a kind of punishment. Children of Adam had to come to this world.
Yes.
Makes no difference whether they ate from that, for example, tree or not, okay?
Mm-hmm. That's
so
right.
That's why here what tempted Adam and Eve was this Azazel,
yes,
or Iblis.
Mm-hmm.
And we cannot blame it only on Adam or only on Eve.
Okay. That's right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Rouhani, for a nice elaboration regarding this topic. It was very kind of you.
Thank you very much,
dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs with me, the host of this program, Brother Atta, and the Sheikh Rouhani as the guest speaker for today's discussion. For more information, visit our website, iranradio.ir. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
لبن علي وحسين وحسن
يوسف جلالي تهران
روباشاف دوزا
جروم هيوز بروسلز
سعيد بورزا لندن
راشا سغلام اسطنبول
سيد امين عالمي كابول
شهان بات انديان ادمنستريد كشمير
Around the world with reporters.
Tensions in Syria have erupted once again as Aleppo becomes the latest flashpoint in the ongoing war. Turkey-backed militants, along with al-Qaeda-affiliated groups, launched an all-out attack on the city, shattering a fragile period of relative calm. The Syrian army says Nusra Front terrorists, supported by thousands of foreign mercenaries and accompanied by heavy weapons and drones, launched the attack from multiple fronts. According to the statement, the Syrian army is strengthening its defense lines and is preparing for a counterattack against them. A coalition of groups, including Tekfiri and al-Qaeda-linked terrorists, launched their coordinated attacks on Aleppo and Idlib provinces on Wednesday. Syrian Foreign Minister Bassam Sabah says the attacks come within the framework of serving the goals of the Israeli occupation entity and its sponsors. He pointed to Israel's role in sponsoring terrorist groups such as Hayat Tahrir al-Sham in Syria, noting that Damascus has always warned of the obvious coincidence between the Israeli regime's airstrikes on government-held areas and the subsequent attacks of terrorist groups. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has at times voiced support for anti-Syrian government terrorists. In 2014, he even paid a visit to a field hospital established in occupied Golan Heights to treat wounded militants. Turkey has also played a significant role in supporting these groups. From the beginning of the war, Ankara has been training and arming anti-Damascus groups and provided them with a base for their operations. It later launched direct attack on Syria, which resulted in the occupation of parts of northern Syria that has been going on since August 2016. The war in Syria erupted in 2011. Many believe that the foreign support for anti-Damascus groups has been the main reason why the conflict has not ended yet, after more than a decade. Syria is regarded as the forefront of what has come to be called the axis of resistance against Israel in West Asia. And now it seems that after the failure of the U.S. and Israel in Gaza and Lebanon, they plan to further undermine and destabilize the regional security to cover up further defeats.
A solemn ceremony to bid farewell to a national hero. A loss that underscores the continued sacrifices made by Iranian military advisors in the region as they maintain peace and stability in the face of threats from terrorist groups. Martyred in Aleppo last week, senior IRGC commander Brigadier General Kayumaspur Hashemi played a vital role in assisting Syrian forces, serving as a military advisor.
Martyr Pur Hashemi was a brave and dedicated commander, a symbol of sacrifice. His martyrdom is a reminder of the unyielding commitment we have to support Syria in its struggle against foreign-backed terrorists. Despite these attacks, we remain resolute in our mission.
Martyr Pur Hashemi lost his life in Aleppo during a large-scale assault by foreign-backed terrorists targeting Syrian military positions. This attack, reportedly carried out by the Hayat Tahrir al-Sham group, marked a significant escalation in the ongoing conflict in Syria, making the fight against them and the presence of Iranian military advisors even more crucial. Martyr Pur Hashemi's son, feeling proud despite the loss.
I am grateful to God that my father achieved what he always wished for, to sacrifice his life in the righteous path. My father believed in defending the innocent and fighting terrorism wherever it existed. Losing him is painful, but I take great pride in knowing that his sacrifice has helped bring peace to many. I always remember how committed he was to the resistance. He was fighting for his country and for Syria, aiming for the region to be peaceful. His legacy will continue through the strength of the Iranian forces and the Syrian people.
General Pourhashemi's martyrdom comes amid ongoing efforts by Iran to support Syria in its fight against terrorism. Since 2011, Iran has maintained an advisory mission in Syria at the request of the Syrian government. The Iranian military advisors have been instrumental in assisting Syrian forces reclaim territory and restore security.
Martyr Pourhashemi was not only a great warrior, but also a true man. At a time when our enemies tried to weaken the resistance, he stood firm and sacrificed his life. His blood will not be in vain.
As the country mourns the loss of this brave commander, Iranians remain firm in their support for Syria, signaling that this tragedy will not deter their commitment to regional peace and security.
Martyr Kiomars Pourhashemi was not the first, and he will not be the last, as Iran remains steadfast in its support for Syria. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
Despite reports of Israeli violations of a ceasefire deal in Lebanon, the people of South Lebanon, the Bekaa, and South Beirut eagerly drove back to their homes. Raising the picture of martyr Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, they returned to collect the pieces, but their resilience was evident in their words.
Our message to Netanyahu and the Israeli enemy is this. No matter what you do, you cannot break our will. And Sayyid Hassan is the crown of our nation, and his blood is more valuable and honorable than anything.
This is a gift from us to all resistance fighters in the Arab and Muslim worlds. We thank God for this victory. There were 70,000 Israeli soldiers at our border, but they could not enter by force, and they will never be able to unarm the resistance.
Hezbollah officials have already begun coordinating with the Lebanese government to begin a new phase of rebuilding.
We will rebuild our homes, and we will negotiate with our partners in Lebanon to rebuild the state politically and economically. They failed in 2006 and failed in their so-called plot for a new Middle East. This is in itself a victory despite the suffering, the sorrow, the destruction and displacement. A victory is measured in strategic terms and not the destruction of a house or the loss of our beloved brothers whom we are saddened to miss.
Hezbollah believes the upcoming era will be the beginning of a wider alliance for the people of the region to form a strength that Israel cannot break.
As Hezbollah's resistance concluded what many experts are calling the most brutal battle in its history, the people of Lebanon have begun a new chapter of dusting themselves off and wiping out the traces of the Israeli killing machine. Maryam Saleh from the southern suburbs of Beirut.
For much of the world, it all started on October 7, 2023. But for Iranians, solidarity with Palestinians began with the very birth of the Islamic Republic in 1979. Following the victory of Iran's Islamic Revolution, its then-leader Imam Khomeini wrote a letter inviting Muslims across the world to express their solidarity with Palestinians on the last Friday of every Ramadan, the day he coined as Quds Day. The Iranian nation's belief in standing with oppressed people such as Palestinians is reflected in Article 154 of the Constitution of the Islamic Republic, according to which it is a moral duty to support oppressed peoples fighting for their rights. Throughout the years, Iranians have consistently supported Palestine, standing in solidarity with its people in their struggle for rights and justice. Iran does not recognize the illegal occupation of Palestine, and the Iranian parliament has passed several resolutions to provide financial support to Palestinians, admit their displaced students to Iranian universities, and more. This commitment became even more evident after Israel launched its genocidal war on Gaza on October 7, 2023. In less than a month, over 10 million Iranians participated in a nationwide campaign to go to Gaza, and the hashtag #YoureDealingWithUs addressing Israel went viral. the heartfelt actions of ordinary Iranians have spoken louder than the words of powerful politicians, with countless people showing their support by donating their life savings at numerous grassroots charity events and donation drives.
We will give whatever we have, be it our gold, house, or car. We have started a financial initiative to donate to Palestinians. We will help them in any way we can to free them from the cursed, genocidal Israeli regime.
We have sold whatever we had at home that was barely used at a low price, just so we could donate the proceeds to Palestine.
I came here for the children in Gaza, Palestine, and Lebanon as my leader had commanded, and I have brought some of my allowance for them.
We've held this gathering to give the people around the world the message that the Islamic Republic of Iran and its resilient people support the resistance front and will never stop supporting the oppressed people of Palestine and Gaza, and all of those who are fighting in the resistance front.
And so long as war crimes continue, so will resistance and solidarity with Palestinians.
Maryam Azarchur, Tehran.
A totally unusual moment of happiness in the face of extreme adversity. Aysen has just arrived in the world but doesn't know whether she will live another day. And her family's displacement camp, her mother, who lost her only son, along with other moms and children, gathered to celebrate the moment, a sense of sheer euphoria she hopes to last forever. As the cake reads, Aysen's family hopes to find light with her daughter in the midst of complete darkness and bleakness. The other for two children, Maya and Yazan, 13 years old, who the war severely traumatized and deprived of their basic rights, and the mother, embracing her newborn baby, whose eyes haven't yet opened to the injustice of this world, wishes to come back home and escape the incessant horror it chasing her family.
There is a sense of joy here. However, it is not complete as we are in the midst of a war and have been forced to leave our homes. Our lives are simply too difficult. Prices are really high. I have a newborn baby and thinking about how to provide her with milk, diapers, clothes, nourishment. Everything is outrageously expensive here. I even suffered from hunger during pregnancy and childbirth. But I'm very grateful to God for having this girl after my only son was killed.
We've had a great time celebrating our birthdays. I'm eager to return to my home in Gaza City. We wish to return to our hometowns and schools. This war will eventually come to an end, God willing.
Newborn Aysen and the twin children, Maya and Yazan, don't know if they will live for the next days. But the war in Gaza, which killed more than 43,000 Palestinians, mostly children and women, and wounded over 105,000 others, has never changed the resilience and steadfastness of the Palestinian people. And the happiness we've just lived today with those people is a reflection of eternal hope they have been always clinging on to. Abu Bakr Abid, Deir al-Balah, Gaza.
As temperatures drop in Gaza, displaced Palestinians living in makeshift tents with little food or warm clothes are bracing for the approaching winter, the second since the war began. Hundreds of thousands of families are trapped under uninterrupted Israeli strikes hitting every corner of the coastal strip.
We didn't find any other place but this one after we were displaced from northern Gaza and then from Rafah. We call on those who are still conscientious to look at us and stand with us. Unfortunately, the entire world has let us down. Honestly, living here on the beach this winter is more horrible than the war itself.
The heavy rain has also flooded the tents of the displaced in different parts of the Gaza Strip. While some Palestinians managed to retrieve their children from the sea, their lives were in ruins when the high tidal waves swept over their flimsy makeshift tents.
Suddenly, we lost everything, our tents, belongings, and tarps.
Our tent was sheltering 15 people, including my daughters and their children. Look, our children barely survived the heavy rains and strong waves. They only have the pieces of clothing they're wearing. We don't know what to do or where to go. No one cares about us.
Nearly 14 months of Israeli genocide in Gaza has reduced the coastal strip to ruins and rubble. Palestinians are trapped under brutal bombardments, facing unbearable starvation, and now perishing weather conditions.
With the harsh winter looming to make the humanitarian crisis in Gaza even worse, only an end to the war could offer the displaced Palestinians real hope. Israel's deadly assault, however, continues with no sign of ending, while the whole world remains silent on the ongoing genocide in Gaza. The middle area of Gaza Strip.
Places of worship have been highly sensitive in the Indian subcontinent since the 1947 partition. In India, disputes over them are frequently exploited for political gain, playing on voter sentiments. On Sunday, a survey of the centuries-old Grand Mosque in Uttar Pradesh Sambal district sparked deadly clashes, claiming 5 lives. Hindu groups claim the mosque was built on a destroyed temple during Mughal rule, while Muslim groups are fighting related legal cases in various courts. In recent years, Hindu groups in many states have filed numerous lawsuits alleging that mosques were built on erased Hindu temples during the Mughal era.
Sunday's incident has reignited fears of violence over a sensitive religious dispute in the world's most populous nation, which is marred by the history of communal carnage. After the partition of India in 1947, at the end of British rule,
Hindu activists and groups, many affiliated with Prime Minister Modi's ruling party, claim several mosques were built on the sites of centuries-old Hindu temples razed by the Mughal Empire. Observers note these groups have grown bolder since the recent inauguration of a controversial Hindu temple built on the site of a Babri mosque in Ayodhya, destroyed by a Hindu mob on December 6, 1992. Muslim groups denounce this as a violation of the Places of Worship Act 1991, despite lower courts ordering such surveys, and are calling for Supreme Court intervention.
This drive has been ongoing since the demolition of the Babri mosque. It's been a deliberate political agenda since 1990. Unfortunately, even the court judgment failed to serve justice, despite the lack of evidence proving the Babri Mosque was built after razing a temple. This is all a political conspiracy by communal forces.
Prominent Muslim scholars condemned the recent violence, calling it a clear example of lawlessness, injustice and cruelty. Activists echoed this sentiment, stating that the ruling party aims to reduce Muslims to second-class citizens with limited civil liberties, unable to even protest for their constitutionally guaranteed fundamental rights.
We have to understand that these are essential elements of the ideology of Bharatiya Janata Party, and all these acts are aimed at marginalizing Muslims and criminalizing all aspects of their life and to restrain their living. That is the ideology of Bharatiya Janata Party. We have to understand it, and therefore we call it fascism.
Rights activists and observers say that since the ruling party came to power in 2014, Muslims have faced systematic repression, including hate speeches, hate crimes, mob lynching, the new citizenship law, and now the push for a uniform civil code and the seizure of Muslim charitable properties waqf. Activists say the aim is to disempower Muslims as a part of a larger political agenda to create a unified Hindu-first India. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you.
IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. In the Limelight.
For more than a decade, Syria has faced the most savage forms of mercenary terrorism backed by a coalition of Western and Arab countries. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, Syria surrounded by the Mediterranean Sea to the west, Turkey to the north, Iraq to the east and southeast, Jordan to the south and Palestine and Lebanon to the southwest, has a massive strategic significance. The country also faced the first ever successful social media propaganda campaign that fueled the war years ago in a bid to impose a much wider and more sinister agenda with destructive goals. These included attempts to divide the two largest sects of Islam, the Shia and Sunnis, inflict damage to the axis of resistance and, in particular, tarnish the image of the Lebanese Hezbollah resistance movement. When the 2011 Arab Spring kicked off in the region, it quickly turned into a terrorist autumn, with the legitimate concerns of the people brushed under the carpet. This was the same period that then-Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki expelled U.S. troops from Iraq. No boots on the ground were to the benefit of the U.S. as they were returning in coffins. However, no military bases in the region were a concern for U.S. hegemony, especially when one puppet regime was being toppled after the other. And who was set to come to power? Had the Arab Spring gone as planned? Leaders with hatred of America, its Zionist proxy, and sympathetic to the Palestinian cause. This is why the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, stated that it was an Islamic awakening, not an Arab Spring. The U.S. tapped into extremist Takfiri elements that deviated from Islam and terrorized the Arab Spring with Takfiri boots on the ground. NATO-sponsored military coups also wreaked havoc in many countries, taking away people's dreams. But Syria was always the prime target. The Arab country is the beating heart of the resistance axis. Representatives of Takfiri terrorists, quite remarkably spared from prison in the West, were provided with platforms to speak on Western mainstream media at prime time to brainwash as many youths as possible. Basically, a recruiting scheme. This is while social media footage of peaceful protests in the Syrian cities of Daraa and Homs appeared to show protesters being shot at. Yet, many eyebrows were raised. Why were security forces firing at protesters who had every right to demonstrate peacefully if they had domestic grievances?
Those who have been to Syria before the war, including former British ambassador to the country, Peter Ford, witnessed firsthand examples of how a society with so many different ethnic and religious groups can coexist in complete peace and harmony. What really happened in Daraa and Homs was a massively funded campaign by Persian Gulf kingdoms who were watching on with horror at the prospect of being dethroned themselves to manipulate social media videos and make them appear as if Syrian security forces were shooting and killing protesters. Except they weren't. This was documented shortly afterward by some of the most prominent activists and later by investigative journalists as well. Yet the damage had been done. Tens of thousands of Takfiri terrorists, if not hundreds, from around the world had already crossed into Syria via Turkey, a NATO member, to fight the Syrian Arab army. The CIA started its training, arming and funding program for these terrorists in neighboring Jordan. The Zionist regime set up a field hospital in the occupied Golan to treat injured militants. And to this day, nobody has really answered how Daesh terrorists got their hands on the best US-made Toyotas. The Syrian government and its people sacrificed a more comfortable and easy life because they stood with Palestine and the Palestinian cause. As did Hezbollah in Lebanon. Many of its weapons were provided by Syria, an ally, to protect Lebanon and help Palestine. Hezbollah entered the fight against Takfiri terrorists in Syria to avoid a civil war when a sacred shrine of Muslims, that of the granddaughter of the Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, Sayyidah Zainab, which holds a special place in every Shia Muslim's heart, came under attack on the outskirts of Damascus. Hezbollah also sought to defeat the terror groups and restore peace and calm in the war-ravaged Arab country in the fight against the Zionist regime. The fake social media propaganda against Hezbollah played a pivotal role in making the war on Syria appear like a global sectarian Shia-Sunni problem. Whoever has any doubts lingering that these terrorists are not sponsored by the Zionists and its allies should assess recent events. A ceasefire forced on the Zionist regime by Hezbollah over the past week coincided with the largest terror offensive on the Syrian city of Aleppo by Takfiri militants since 2017. Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, HTS, formerly known as Al-Qaeda, with the only difference being the name change, were holed up in the northwestern city of Idlib near the Turkish border for years. HTS leader Abu Muhammad Jolani, who has pledged allegiance to every terror leader alive and in living memory, was awarded a large convoy of fighters alongside advanced military equipment that crossed the Turkish border into Idlib last week. The fabricated Hezbollah crimes in Syria, still widely circulating in Persian Gulf media, continue to serve as a tool to attack Hezbollah and the entire axis of resistance to this day. After Hezbollah humiliated the Zionist Golani Brigade on the southern Lebanese border, forcing Netanyahu to a temporary truce so his army could take a breather, Jolani stepped in to compensate. The aim is to wreak havoc in Syria again and prevent any military supplies from reaching Hezbollah. This was openly stated by Netanyahu. But just as the US, Zionists, Persian Gulf, and Turkish plot to destabilize Syria was defeated before, the same will happen again. This is not the same Syria as 2011. The axis of resistance that aided Syria before has gained a vast level of experience in dealing with these foreign terrorists.
The liberation of Aleppo from HTS-led groups in 2017 shifted the trajectory of the war in Syria through brave men, including Iranian military advisors, who saw the defeat of Daesh and other head-chopping groups. The Iraqi resistance alone has put on notice 40,000 fighters to enter Syria if needed. It can double that number if HTS lingers around for too long. Perhaps the most important element to comprehend how these Takfiri gangs operate for the Zionists and its allies is the fact they did not fire a single shot at the Israeli regime amid almost 14 months of genocide in Gaza, and never once did they do so in their history. One side sacrificed its best leaders and its highest commanders for Palestine, while the other side is determined to kill Muslims in Syria and protect the Zionist regime.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special, and I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear ladies. Welcome back to a new episode of your very favorite Muslim lady. This is Asma. I have the honor to be your host. And again, I have the pleasure to be at the service of Sister Zainab. Welcome to the studio.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming here. Well, it's been so long of a journey to know you and to have a succession of episodes with you about that are the concerns of women and Muslim ladies out there. But then, with all of these staff, I would like you to give us a very brief introduction about yourself for those people who have just joined us.
All right. I'm Turfatul and Zainab Askari, and I am from Kashmir, which is under Indian administration. And I have been living in Iran for some past 9 years now. And I have studied a master's in linguistics. And I have also I'm also engaged in the Hausa studies. And at the same time, I'm teaching.
That's great. As for today, we're going to shed some lights upon the topic of how to maintain balance when a newborn child has come into the family, or when this newborn child is growing up and then the attention of mother is fully focused on that a newcomer and that child. How to make this balance in the family dynamics? Because, you know, sometimes we hear that the men would feel in a way that, okay, they are missed out. Like, they're misfits. They do not belong to that home anymore. They feel like they're extra to this community. So how to maintain this balance?
Yeah, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Definitely, there are so many complaints from men who say that, especially when our wife, when there's this transition from being a wife to the parenthood now, then like they feel they are being rejected. They are not being paid much attention to. Like, as a woman, like when you have you just have a baby, you're tired, you're overwhelmed, amidst all the joys and cuddles you're going through, there's a feeling that you didn't expect.
Mm-hmm.
Because that feeling was not shown out there. See, resentment towards your partner. Sometimes after your new baby arrives, instead of that romantic glow that you see in the movies, that you see on the Instagram, that you see on your
media,
friend's profile, that you actually see that's being bombarded, basically, which is a big lie. You might start to actually, kind of your partner may feel, no, that was not true. Actually, I'm feeling rejected. I'm feeling mm-hmm. someone, as you said, I'm an extra thing over here. Now they are a team. Before, like, she and me used to be a team, and now
exactly.
she has actually started a team with the channel now, and now I'm an extra thing
here. What am I doing here?
And like, Trust me, like, there's not just this man, one man alone who has this feeling. Like, many men out there.
The majority, let's say.
Yes, yes. And even, like, I would say I have gone through this feeling.
Yeah. And I guess it's pretty natural.
Yeah, my husband has had the same feeling.
And so, half of it, of course, is natural, as I just said. Because, you know, as you just perfectly mentioned, there is this newcomer. You have to cope up with the situation. You have to handle the situation because you have never been through this. You have to devote sometimes. That little kid needs too much of attention. You are much more worn out right now. And maybe you'd have to focus on different things. So yeah. Sometimes the list of your concern would be the fact that, okay, he would be jealous. Let's just put it this way, at least to be more real.
Yeah.
He'd be jealous from the child. This wouldn't be a thing that you would concern.
There are many women out there who actually do it deliberately because they
see.
You know why? Because, like, having a baby actually changes everything. Your body changes, your routines change, your sleep changes. Everything gets, like, turned upside down.
And your priorities change.
Yeah, everything turns upside down. But then this leads to a feeling of frustration within the woman. And, like, she feels overwhelmed. She feels like now she's not important because, like, everything has changed in her life. And now maybe she actually starts getting that distance herself, which is the wrong thing. What can be done to maintain this balance? Actually,
what can be done? I guess let's keep the ground in here and then go for a break. Then we'd come back to see what we can do. Welcome back, dear ladies. Well, you're listening to Muslim Ladies. Sister Zainab and I are talking about the situation which actually works as a turning point in the life of parents and couples. Of course, before that, they're a couple, and then after that, they're turned to be parents. So when a new child comes into the family, or when there are children in the family, the mother, apparently, it seems that she has turned her attention fully on the children. So the husband would feel like a missed out point in that family. Like the entire family, the mother and the children are making a team, and then he stays out there all alone.
Yeah. So,
what can we do?
You can be wise. You can be wise and you can actually navigate this situation applying so many strategies. For example, like, first of all, involve him in baby care. You know, when you're a mother, you find yourself the solo star of this 24/7 parenting show while your partner, he seems to have snagged the guest appearance. No, like, that's why he feels like that, because you have taken over all the responsibility yourself.
Yeah.
Of parenting, and you feel like, yes, baby needs the utmost care that time. But it's not only you, right? So it's actually bringing a newborn into the world is a teamwork. And caretaking should also be shared responsibility. So do not take it this way. You'll yourself be overwhelmed and you won't even realize you're not giving him the time. But when when you're involving him in the, you know, in the baby care, he would actually understand and he won't feel rejected. He won't have this feeling. He would also feel,
feel tired this time.
We're on another job now. We're on another journey now. So that's one you could do, I think. And another thing is that involve him in baby care. It does not mean like each and everything you need to do together in baby care. It's about distributing the tasks and actually in a way that caters each of your strengths, your preferences and your schedules. It should not be like you're overtaking everything as a mother and you're being entire parent. No, parents means two of you. And when you're both involving, you have time for yourself as well.
Exactly.
Right? So there's this talk to him. Talk to him. There's this room of empathy, the room of growth and improvement. Be patient and offer constructive feedback sometimes. And be open to learning from your partner. For example, sometimes they tell you, when you're a mother, you feel like you know everything A to Z about this baby care. Sometimes have this listening ear as well. If he's giving you tips, apply them or listen to them at least. So otherwise, like even when you're not listening, don't hold the baby this way, don't do this way. Like I remember, like whenever I still, whenever I hold somebody's baby, my husband tells me, hold his neck properly, you're not able to. So, you know, sometimes we have to listen. And when we do not listen, they actually feel more rejected.
Yes.
So, yeah, even if he's giving you those baby care tips.
That you already know. Trying to shake your head and show, okay, yes, I'm approving your words.
Yeah. So discuss those feelings and challenges and also needs with each other. So talking to each other is another step. And then I would say schedule regular time for just two of you. When it's just two of you, schedule a time.
Try to have some quality time.
Quality
for each
time,
other.
Like even if it's just a short walk, for example. And when you are spending some quality time with him, when we say quality time means quality time.
Yeah, it
quality
doesn't mean picking your cell phone in your hand and sitting beside each other. No, it's not quality time.
Quality time is actually keep your phone aside. You know, have limited distractions.
Talk to each other. Share.
Yeah. When you're spending time with each other, try to minimize all kind of distractions that's possible. I would say in today's world, phone is the biggest one. In the like earlier times, it was television.
Yeah.
So like apart from these things, even if it's a TV serial, if it's a movie or anything, keep them distractions aside and have a quality time. So when we say quality time, it should be like without any distractions.
It should be pure quality time.
Pure quality time.
Yeah. So now we're getting close to the very last part of today's episode. We go for a break and then we'd come back for the last part of today's episode.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Women have got a lot on their plate. Like once they are little girls, they have to take care of other siblings. If they have, and if they don't, they turn to be these mother figures everywhere they go, out of schools, wherever they enter, they try to be this protective source of feeling and emotion and also caring. Now, when the roles change and she becomes a wife, again, she's got many responsibilities. And then when she becomes a mother, all of her responsibilities would be doubled up. So at this point, she has to take care of both the children and also the husband for him, in order for him not to be so missed out, not to have the feeling of this misfit person in the house. So you actually mentioned some points like to engage him in the caring process and encourage them, the husbands, actually, to take part in this caring routine of the children, of the kids and the babies. What more?
Well, I would say it would be very wise to act on the footsteps of Lady Zahra Salamalaiha when she was a mother, when she used to shake this baby Imam Hassan alayhi salam. She would tell him, she would recite the poems like, I think we said it before as well, but I would repeat it. She recites the poem, for example, O Hassan, be like your father and free the truth from the chains, like liberate the truth and worship the merciful God and do not befriend with those or who harbor enmity. So, I want to say that she is at the same time taking care of a baby, at the same time teaching him immense amount of wisdom, at the same time giving attention to her husband.
And making the father stay in the picture of the role model for the kids.
Yes, yes. Like I would say, like, be as wise as her, act wisely as she did. Like what could be better example than this? So,
well, now maybe the women out there would tell you that, okay, that was a Lady Fatima Zahra Salamullah Alayha and her husband was the perfect man in the world. Now, if I have some, you know how the real life goes. If the women have got some criticism toward her husband, she doesn't have to project that to the children. She doesn't definitely have to echo definitely that in the ear of the children.
Yeah. You have to be actually never, ever, whatever the conflicts you're having, keep them inside your room.
Exactly.
Like we have a rule in our family. We say, like, whatever is between you and me, that's in this bedroom. That should not go outside this bedroom. Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah, there are some words that are private. There are conflicts that are private. There's everything between you that is, like, your garment of each other. Mm-hmm. So do not even, like, do that in front of your children.
Yeah,
like,
do not even reveal that to your kids.
Yes.
Because you are doing many things at the same time. You're actually creating too much of harms. Because you're changing the perspective that those children would have of their fathers. And this is not a good thing to happen for a
right.
child.
And I would say, like, surprise him. Sometimes, like, make a surprise snack. It won't take much time. I won't say make something heavy, make a good dish that will take you hours. Make a surprise snack, you know, so that he feels like
for the father and the kid.
He feels I'm also in this team.
Yeah.
I'm also a part of this family.
The only thing that is there is that now I have some new responsibilities. I'm much more busy and I have less time. But it doesn't mean that you are not my priority anymore. There are some small little tiny things in this world that matter to people so much, and specifically in the house between the husband and the wife. Out of all these tiny little things, you can let some new, very beautiful flowers of friendship and connection sprout out. So just give way for it and let it happen. So thank you, Sister Zainab, and thank you to your listeners for staying with us until another episode. I just bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
This hour's top headlines. This year, an army backed by Russian fighter jets continues to pound terrorist hideouts, inflicting heavy blows on Takfiri groups in Idlib, Hama, and Aleppo provinces. Iran says the Syrian army is capable of